Hello, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Florida Building Commission's concurrent meeting of the structural TAC with the Fenestration Water Resistant Work Group. First, I'd like to remind us of our teleconference participation process, which is basically, please be aware that whatever you're doing in the background, conversations, doing tapping things, comes through the phone. So it would be best if you would keep your phone on mute, but not on hold. Or please be very quiet in the background, because phones do project, and Jim will have to mute you, and you won't be able to speak. Once we get started, whenever you speak, please say your name. If a motion is made, then say your name, and a second, whoever made the second, state their name, since it's not a face-to-face meeting. Please wait to speak until I call on you. I will stack names in each instance to provide ample opportunities for comments. So the main thing is, be aware that what you're doing in the background is making noise, and there is some going on right now, so sooner or later, if that's not corrected, Jim will have to mute. If you're in a car, be aware that background noises are also coming through, wind noises, so it'd be best to keep your phone muted for most of the time unless you're going to speak. Okay, well, let's then determine that we have a quorum of each of our two groups. I'm going to start with the structural TAC. Commissioner Schock.
I'm here.
Very good. Warner Chang.
I'm here.
All right. David Compton. Commissioner Compton.
Here.
Michael Garacio.
Here.
Jamie Gascon.
Here.
Okay. Joe Hetzel.
Here.
Do Kim.
Here.
Dan Laveridge. C.W. Ma Cumber.
Here.
How did I do, C.W.?
You're good, man.
All right. Craig Perino.
Craig.
And my understanding, Dick Wilhelm, you're on the phone for Steve Strong, correct?
Here. That is correct.
All right, we have 10 of 11. We do have a quorum. All right.
So this Dan Laveridge?
Oh, Dan, you're there too. Okay, we have 11 of 11. Very good. Okay,
one. And John Holt is also.
What's that?
Jeff?
John Holt is here also.
Yeah, I haven't got to that. This is the Commission's Structural Technical Advisory Committee. I'm establishing a quorum for them. I'm going to go do the work group after that.
Understood. Thank you.
Hey, Jeff?
Yes, sir.
Dan Laveridge.
Yes, Dan, I have you too.
I'm having trouble logging on the computer.
Okay.
I click on the link that you sent, and it comes up with Microsoft Exchange.
Copy in the web address instead of clicking the link, and it'll work. I have the same.
Say again.
Copy.
I'm sorry. Say again.
She's saying copy and paste the link into your browser. It may be you need to refresh.
Copy and paste it instead of clicking the link. Problem.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try that.
Try copying and pasting it in. Some of it, maybe you need to refresh your browsers as well, because it could cache in from other previous stuff. Or it also could be the browser you're using. Some browsers have trouble with some sites. I've had that problem, not being able to use a certain browser on certain, you know, like Zoom or some other site or provider. Okay, so we have a quorum. What I'm going to do is go ahead and since we have the quorum, is get the TAC to approve the minutes and the agenda from the last meeting, and then I need an agenda. Thanks. And then I'll go back to the other TAC and do the same thing. Thank you. Okay, so the agenda is, first off, is are there any revisions or corrections to, well, actually, the agenda for today is to approve the minutes and then to provide comments to really the staff and to the principal investigator on the proposal for a research project related to the fenestration water resistance issue. And that's pretty much it, and then any public comments. So is there a motion to approve the agenda as posted for the structural TAC?
I'm going to approve.
All right, we have Commissioner Compton on the
second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, it's unanimous. And then, are there any revisions or additions to the July 10th meeting minutes? If not, is there a motion to approve the structural tax meeting minutes?
Laverich moved to approve the minutes. Compton, second.
All right, Laverich and Compton, all in favor say aye.
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 All right, Janana.
Yes. You're breaking up a little bit when you're talking.
I am? All right, I'm standing right next to the phone. Is that any better?
No.
So it must be something here.
It's not the volume, it's like crackling in your voice.
Sounds like a connection problem.
Could be. There are a lot of electronics at the table here, so there. Does that make any difference?
No, we'll get by. Just keep
on. Okay. If it's not better, we could probably try to redial it and see if we can establish a better connection.
Won't affect them at all.
Yeah, and y'all can stay on. So, is it still sound crackly to you?
Yes.
All right, we're going to go ahead and redial it. Everybody, just stay on the line. Do not do it. Don't change anything. You will not be disconnected. So just hang in there, okay?
Well,
we didn't have the power extensions on. Let's see if it works there.
All right, is that any better?
Okay, can you hear us better now?
sounds about the same, Jeff.
Okay, we're gonna try to remove some of the you can unplug me. It's all right. We're gonna try to remove some of the electronics on the table here real quick and see if that makes a difference. Or we have a lot of laptops at the table, and sometimes it interferes for some reason. Let me know if you're hearing any difference in that. Is it still the same?
It's still the same, Jeff, and you're getting a lot of background noise.
Okay. I'm not sure why it's doing it. I don't know if that bundle has anything to do with it.
Maybe just...
Maybe unplug the bundle?
Yeah, unplug it from there.
Let me put that up.
All right, does that make any difference? Folks?
Doesn't sound like it.
All right. I guess we're going to have to muddle through as we are. If you're not able to understand me, I guess, we'll see what we can do here. Okay, so we've established...
There's other crosstalk going on in the background. It's at a much lower volume, but it's there.
Yeah, we hear that, too. That's not in this room. I think that's another... maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe Jim can locate that and mute that group.
Lynn Miller.
It seems to be Lynn Miller. Lynn, do you have anything going on in the back that you could stop?
I don't have anything going on here. But I tell you what, I can call in by phone. Maybe that'll help.
Okay. Why don't we do that?
Let me switch to phone call. Maybe we're getting some feedback on
my... Just mute your line.
All right.
Hey Jeff, I think it sounds better now.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, much better. And that background crosstalk seems to be gone.
Yeah, it was coming from Lynn Miller's phone, turns out, who's not in the room here, but just that's how these things work sometimes. Okay, so we've had the structural tack is ready to roll. I'm going to roll over to the fenestration work group to make sure we have a quorum for that group. And Joe Belcher. Joe?
Here.
Okay. Warner Chang?
Here.
Commissioner Compton?
Here.
Jamie Gascon?
Here.
Commissioner Gross?
Here.
Mike Garacio?
Here.
Gary Hartman?
Here.
John Holt?
Here.
Dan Laveridge?
Here.
Adam Locke?
Here.
Lynn Miller?
Here.
Craig Perino?
Here.
Jason Seals?
Here.
Jim Schock?
Here.
And Dick Wilhelm for Steve Strawn.
Here.
All right, so we have all 15 members present, constituting quorum. Let's go ahead and approve the minutes and the agenda. The minutes and the facilitator's report.
Jeff, Jeff, this is Brad Schiffer. Would you note me as present?
Yes, sir, absolutely. Okay, thanks, Brad. The agenda for this group is to approve the minutes and facilitate reports from the June 18th meeting, and then also to provide comments on the research project regarding the issue of water resistance, fenestration water resistance, the scope of the work group. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? I'm sorry, the agenda as posted.
Leverage moves to approve as posted.
All right.
Second.
Welcome. Motion and second from Laveridge and Belcher. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. I'm a 15-0 in favor. Are there any revisions or additions to the meeting minutes, since I didn't write a report, of the June 18th, 2019 meeting? If not, is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Laveridge moves to approve.
Roscoe, second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. Okay, so we have both groups with quorums. Both groups have approved the agenda and the minutes. So, do you want to say something first, Tom?
Once we do the introduction.
Okay, so let's go ahead and
introduce. Say something.
Yeah. Let's introduce our staff here in Tallahassee.
Jim Hammers.
Mo Magani,
Tom Campbell,
Justin Vogel,
Chris Howell,
and I'm Jeff Blair. All right, so the main purpose of this is to provide comments to the principal investigator on the proposed research project. I'm going to let staff do some introduction.
Mo? Yeah, this is Mo Magani. Good morning. I just wanted to refresh your memory about this research project. As you recall, last June 20, University of Florida, Dr. Prabhat mainly submitted to us and to you, especially the structural tech, a list of research projects. And one of the research projects was the fenestration testing follow on, and mainly was really a response to the fenestration working group with regard to a study to address the water infiltrations through the building envelope. And based on that, mainly David put together simplistic scope of work, which is outline the steps that the project will address, the mock-up testing, the follow-up with an actual testing, and so on. and a calibration of the model for the risk and assessments and all that. What you have before you is mainly a detailed scope of work that put together by Dr. Pravad, which mainly expand and provide more details on the approach to what's presented last June. And David, I know, is on the line to go over the project. And I'm sure, Tom, if you want to speak.
Yeah, I just had a couple of things to add. I've had a chance to review the proposed scope of work that's on the agenda for today. After reviewing it, it definitely appears still to be a rough draft of perhaps a few projects or one very large and probably rather pricey project. Staff and Dr. Pravad will take into consideration the comments and letters received to today as we continue to make some tweaks and adjustments to the scope of work for this project. And additionally, the letters we received today will accompany any draft scope of work that goes in front of the commission for approval, so that the commission will have an opportunity to review those comments as well. Additionally, staff and the University of Florida are working on a few other proposals for research projects that came in front of the structural TAC in June. Staff, we expect to receive those proposals by the end of this week. Once the proposals are received by staff, we will be able to evaluate our budget for each one of the projects and determine exactly how much of this proposed scope of work that is on the agenda for today is feasible to complete in this fiscal year. Now I'll turn it back to Jeff to work through the comments and the proposed scope of work.
All right, thank you, Tom. Do we want David to give a quick song?
Right.
Okay, so before we do that, I just want to, you know, be real clear. I think what you heard from Mo and Tom in terms of what the purpose of this meeting is, it's to provide comments, not to reach an agreement on the scope, to provide comments so that Mo and David can work through that and put together a more refined, discrete scope with a budget. So the important thing is to just keep that in mind as we go through today's discussions. So let's get David, Dr. Pravad, to provide us a summary. I don't think there's any need to go through the word for word, but give us an analysis and summary of the scope proposed, and then we'll go to and systematically and orderly take comments. We've already received written comments. Those, as Tom said, will be included in the record. So all those comments will be evaluated by staff here at DBPR with Dr. Pravad in terms of revising as needed a discrete scope. All right. So David, go ahead and give us a summary of your proposal.
Okay. Good morning. Is it possible I can get access to the screen?
Sure.
Working on it.
Yes. David, you should have the screen now.
All right. Got it. Okay, you should be seeing something now.
We do.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is David Pravat at University of Florida here, and I'm happy to speak to you again once more. It was a long night trying to digest all of this, and I really appreciate all who have provided feedback to me and to Mo and everyone regarding this. It's an important issue for the state of Florida. So the title here is the wind-driven rain test of building envelope systems up to hurricane strength rain intensity. And let's go through this. My co-PI on this one is Jean-Paul Pennelly at Florida Institute of Technology. I'm grateful to Modani and his feedback, and thanks also to the building envelope consultant and a municipal manager in the Southeast Florida area who provided their professional feedback to me. To summarize, we have in phase one presented data, we have been presented data that building envelopes suffered water. That is beyond doubt. And the wind speeds we know are with about 88 miles per hour. Unfortunately, the sample size is limited and the forensic evidence incomplete at the time. What we do know is that at 170 miles per hour, the design wind speed, that will quadruple the wind pressure on those structures. And, you know, there are times where this is what should be driving the work group's in ideas here. As an industry, all of us around the two sides of this these committees, we know that building wall systems, cladding, and fenestration will not remain watertight if exposed to these wind pressures above the standard test protocols. Another thing from Dr. Pennelly's work with the Florida Public Hurricane Loss Model shows that defects within the fenestration, and I've added the building cladding as well, will govern losses due to water leakage below the design wind bank where structural failures will occur. And as such, the FPHLM and other private hurricane insurance models may be under-predicting the economic costs, right, of water damage in a storm like Hurricane Irma or, you know, 100 miles, 120 miles, and so on. So the question here today is what, if anything, should the Florida Building Commission do? So as I was thinking about this, I wondered, well, who are we? You know, and if we thought about that, we are representing a lot of different industries here, product manufacturers, contractors. I'm a structural engineer representing the university research. We have insurance and so on. These are all the people around the table at present. Okay? We also have the building officials who are going to be front and center in dealing and addressing these problems. But there is one missing link. And that is the homeowners and city managers and the Florida Division of Emergency Management and FEMA. These are the people who are going to be in the hurricane and addressing the leakage as it happens. Okay? So let's not lose sight of the fact that while there are 74 people on this call, there are 20 million Floridians who we have a responsibility to, and in addition, there are 1.3 million Floridians who suffered the water leakage in that area. So when I started looking at this last night again, I thought, well, why? Why is the purpose of the work group? And then, you know, it's always good to go back to the history of things. And looking back in 2008, Florida Building Commission magazine says, stronger codes through science and consensus. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, exactly what we are doing. I was so fortunate at the time to have spent some time with Rick Dixon, the executive director of the FTC at the time. And, you know, one of the quotes he had in this thing was that the law now prioritizes property protection from hurricane winds and water intrusion and mitigation of existing buildings. This is what the state of Florida's law says. This is what the Florida Building Code does. It is a policy document to effect what the Tallahassee wishes to do. He continues, it continues to focus significant resources on developing the fundamental science essential to good engineering standards and building codes. So, you know, this is what we are about. What we have here is not just an understanding or misconceptions of the engineering. We in this room might understand that. What we have to be able to understand is the lack of knowledge that those 1.3 million homeowners, they are actually facing and how we best address that in the building code. In the proposal, you saw this chart that says there are 17 new high-rise buildings in Miami over 100 meters plus in the next 4 years. This here suggests that a very ambitious plan that Tom told you about might be possible, but there are a lot of bottlenecks that will prevent this, and I think that this is what the work group and I and the FPC staff needs to discuss. Okay? So again, let's wrap our hands around why we're here. You know, my research, it shows statistically that the public holds misconceptions as to the potential damage from hurricanes. Mostly this is optimistic bias. They believe that the damage is not going to be as disastrous as it seems like. Okay? What does this mean? That the interpretation, as we try to tell the public about this is a guideline and this is what it means for your building to have survived without structural damage, it's passed in terms of the building codes, they don't understand that. All they are going to understand is what actually affects their lives. Okay? If these water intrusions are affecting their lives, it doesn't matter whether we tell them that the building code was at 20% or 50% or 100%. It leaked, my friend. Everything I had was ruined. I want to know why I had to subscribe to the Florida Building Code if that is the case. If we look back at our post-Irma water damage study and those zip codes that we looked at, there are 504,000 households there, and 1.8% increase in our Florida population. For those of us who were here during 2004 and 2005, that was one of those times when we had a dip in the population growth. It probably didn't slow completely, but certainly the amount of migration into Florida was reduced as a result of having four hurricanes and people getting a little bit antsy about the survival and desire to live on a coastal Florida area. However, what keeps people coming here is that they know the Florida Building Code provides them with a hurricane resilient design that has been proven time and again. And as a result, there is confidence, and this number of 1.8% is increasing. So therefore, given the fact that we know of a problem, we know that if one tests something at this level and the loads exceed that level, that bad things will happen. What do we do? And I propose three options. The first two, hopefully, no one will agree to. That is option they do nothing because there's insufficient evidence for a prima facie case. B, we could immediately go to the Florida Building Commissioners and say, raise the wind-driven rain pressure test to some X percent, and you choose a number, any number. But that is not following a scientific or a consensus-based approach. Option C is what I propose, and this has evolved since my draft that Tom mentioned there, that we study the options to develop a rational approach. And this, again, the reason it is study as opposed to test is this is a considerable professional work to do a two-story mock-up of a high-rise building. I know it. I've done this before. And therefore, it needs to be approached in slow. Okay? What should we do? I think we definitely want to study and determine the extent that water leaks occurred through an FBC-approved building envelope system subject to wind-driven rain intensities above what is currently tested and in approaching hurricane strength winds. That in itself is a large task. One has to ask the professional testing agencies, the Intertechs of this world, whether in fact their fans and their jets can in fact simulate the pressure that we are looking for. Another thing you have to wonder is, do we have the models for the pressures at those levels or the time durations? Okay. The other thing that we probably want to do is to estimate statewide the losses using a calibrated Florida public hurricane loss model. Again, we focus here on the homeowners who will be affected, the communities, the cities, and the FDM up to a design level event. Okay. The reason is this, that Dr. Pinelli said that the FBHLM appears not to be calibrated to identify the amount of damage that occurs, and this is something that will affect both the homeowners and municipal people, but also the insurance companies if they come up short in the next event. We wish to present and consult with the homeowner. I think this is very, very much a missing link in our things, that we around here cannot only sit around and represent associations and professional bodies like myself and not speak to people who are actually going to be living through this. Okay, we have to make Florida safe and resilient for people who are living there. And ultimately, this means that we decide how to discuss these options with the Florida community itself and let together come up with the best approaches. So again, we come here, and I represent the university researchers, the insurance industry, there are contractors at the table, any product manufacturers at the table, testing labs. So we have all the players. It's just a matter for us to get our heads together and do the right thing. So the scope of work as I see it now is firstly assemble a project team that has a solid representatives of homeowners and condo associations, first and foremost. These are the people who will be paying. These are the people who will be suffering if there is a damage. This project team should be handled with a building envelope consultant, not necessarily just a structural engineering consultant, but someone who is with the qualifications and the experience of working on building envelope systems in high-rise buildings in a hurricane-prone area. I think having a representative of a municipal authority, a city manager level, you know, because they will be responsible for knowing what do we do if, in fact, these buildings that we think aren't supposed to be evacuated, what if they don't work after a hurricane event? Where do we put these many millions of people? And finally, the Florida Public Hurricane Loss Representative, so that we can start getting the discussions with the insurance and the loss models to know what's at stake. Even in task one, there are several things that have to be discussed, and some of these questions are taken from the proposal, you know, again and again and again. Ask Floridians, are you fully aware of the potential liability and risk from wind and water leaks? Do you know it? I don't know it. I don't know what might happen because it's not been tested. The only way we can find out as of today is to await another hurricane and then count how much damage occurs. Is the knowledge available on the magnitude and durations for wind-driven rain on surfaces? And thanks to one of the letters from FMA, WDMA, and AAMA, you know, the speaking with my colleagues here, Forest Masters, we know that, you know, putting a uniform static load on a building at 100% of design pressure may not be realistic because the wind fluctuates constantly. It changes in space, it changes in time, and therefore we have to understand how that works. Forest Masters has done considerable work in the past on this, and that work was reviewed in our report and should be considered. I also wonder about the buildings, and there are buildings, emergency buildings, critical facilities under construction today that people may desire to be leak-free. What are they doing? And what does it cost? How do they, you know, take those risks or reduce those risks to get a functional emergency center at a design level event? If those types of structures and the construction personnel are doing that, then that is something that we all should know about. Hello?
Go ahead, David. Okay. That was some background noise that Jim is taking care of.
Okay. So what are the successful approaches by those building envelope consultants to mitigate water leakage in Florida hurricane-prone coastlines? From my discussions with building envelope consultants, just because the code says 15% or 20% does not mean that's only the level that the testing will occur. Some buildings, unique buildings and high-rise buildings, they undergo wind tunnel tests to determine what the pressures might be. So this is a less conservative approach. And then the mock-ups are tested above those levels. Not so much to point fingers at who is right or who is wrong, but to address problems before they occur. This is what engineering is about. We would like to quantify the cost of upgraded building envelope systems to homeowners. For instance, if I were to tell, you know, one of those 70 new 100-meter tall buildings that you can get a leak-free building, but the cost is going to go up by 50% or 100%, will they buy it? And that is the question, everyone. It's not for us to decide here today what is good for the homeowner. Give them the choice. They need the choice. They're paying. Okay, we are paying. We taxpayers are going to be paying before or after the hurricane, whether it be in the cleanup and the evacuations and the disruptions that occur. So in that context, is a 100% water resistant building envelope system achievable, and at what cost? I don't know if it's achievable. Of course, anything can be done, but then economically, how do we do that? And two other questions I thought of is that how can we collect this data on water leaks during hurricanes? We need not shy away from this, okay? We need not have the sense that product manufacturers that we're going after you. This is not what it's about. But if 500,000 households experience water leakage during a hurricane, the rest of the world will hear about it and Florida will suffer. Okay? We have to address these things. If the code, the building code as a policy document of the state of Florida is to address wind and water intrusion during hurricanes. The second task, I think, and I think I hinted this to Mo already, that the envelope mock-up may not be conducted within the first year. This might be a two-year project. Was to develop some relationships with an existing construction design phase work to develop a mock-up contract specification. I perceive this as selecting a building in South Florida, working with the client, its consultants, building cladding element manufacturers, architects, etc. And in order, they are going to be doing a mock-up test, probably a two-story test containing all of the major elements of that structure, and they are going to be wanting to know what is the client's tolerance for risks and that it meets that. By working with such a company or a group of people, perhaps we can then, dovetail on top of that to do the additional tests that we want. Okay? I don't think my idea would be for me to develop a test that's, just purely out of the research environment. No, this needs to be professional work done in the same consistent manner that all the professional building envelope our consultants are working. So we have including the building cladding, all the sealants, all the joints, just as they would be constructed by the mechanics who would be constructing them, fenestration, whether fixed and operable, all the spandrel panels, and connecting this entire system back to the structural framing. Okay. We would then have the project team witness and observe the mock-up test done in accordance with the client's specifications. And again, I put this here again. The project team includes the homeowners, it includes the condo associations, it includes the municipal managers. Okay? We want to get this information not just within the work group community, but within the Florida community. The mock-up testing should continue beyond those contractual test limits established by the client and their consultants as far as the project team considers it reasonable to test. Okay? This is not a one-size-fits-all. The building is going to be very unique, and it cannot be extrapolated, but at the very minimum, we will see once and for all whether the leakage will occur as occurred at 20% design pressure. What might it look like at 50% or 40% and so on? I suspect much of the test facilities may not be able to provide 100% design pressure, and that is fine. But the importance of this is documentation of the location, the leak paths, and the quantity of water leakage that occurs. And, of course, whether any structural damages may occur to their systems as well. The third task, which is tied to task two, would be to calibrate the FPHLM using the mock-up results. And, it's again, as I say, it's one data point, but it's better than no data point. Because what FDHLM allows the state of Florida to do is to predict those economic losses expected from a minimal hurricane like a Hurricane Irma to some sort of moderate hurricane as defined by the project team between 88 miles per hour and 170 miles per hour. Okay. The understanding from me here is that the 170 miles per hour design, you might have more structural damage and more of that sort that will be governing the losses. But where structural damages remain minimal, we will expect that there's going to be some losses from just the water itself. So of this, we should ask the FPHLM to develop a scenario of these conditions and be able to explain that to homeowners, municipal managers, of the extent of disruptions. I'm very concerned that, while structurally a building, 100 meter tall building is not damaged, but what if those residents cannot occupy it for some other reason? This is a concern for us as a community. Okay? The report findings should be discussed with all concerned. Generally, they have people understand and start to see eye to eye what we mean when we say this building failed or this building passed. Okay? That then the work group and the reports to the Florida Building Commission on their deliberations. The rationale for my approach here is this. I like to pretend that I'm a researcher and that's all my life, but that's not true. I have spent sufficient time as a building envelope consultant to know the complexity and the cost of doing a curtain wall mock-up and investigation. This is, every building is unique. Every building has unique challenges, and it's difficult to extrapolate to go to others. The other thing that, there are going to be several legal barriers to doing this work if we try to do it in a year without further discussion. Product manufacturers may tell clients, we're not going to have our product go up to this because we haven't tested it for that, and so on and so forth. Owners may fear increased liability if the information of leakage at some higher value comes out. What do they do? We have to seek and recruit professional consultants who are qualified and have the time available to do this. And cities will have to find people who will want to walk through this. So there are lots of things. This is a project near to the Washington Bridge in New York City on the New Jersey side of the thing, a 40-story condominium building. I did this work back in the day, and there were several materials and trades involved. It's time-consuming to isolate the source of leaks. This is not an inexpensive thing. It requires a lot of professional contract documentation, mock-up costs, labor, and time. Water testing, as everyone around the table should know, is an art and a science. The spray racks could be variable, how you test, the order that you test, et cetera, et cetera. More to the point, there is a learning curve now for test protocol pressures that go beyond what the code says. Some, as I said, some consultants do that as a rule for buildings in the hurricane-prone areas, but others do not. The jury is still out whether a static test versus a dynamic test is what would be required to do it. As you all know, again, the water leakage paths can be multiple, right? There are several paths where water can come in through. In addition to the fenestration, it can come in below the fenestration, around the fenestration, from above, from the left, from the right. These are the things that have to be included in our work here. Just like University of Florida did back in 2007,
this work is not about just fenestration, and I think I've made that clear in my draft report. It is about the building cladding itself, including fenestration, but including the surrounding cladding materials, joints, spandrels, etc. One of the things that doing a mock-up will not tell us, it will not tell us the information on the interior damage that might be occurred. This is highly variable and dependent upon the finishes, how they are, where they are, etc. Okay, so we have to be cognizant that the mock-up will tell us some of the answer where the water comes in, but not what the water does when it actually gets there. So in summary, work group and structural TAC, we have to clearly understand and be comfortable with the mock-up testing, and I think that will only come from doing it as a professional contract and putting in the hands of building envelope consultants. Much can be learned, however, from the discussion that will inform the work group's recommendations to the commission. The commission, as I said, and as Rick Dixon said in 2008, it's a policy-making arm of the state of Florida. And we are in the business of reducing, mitigating water intrusion damage and wind damage to structures. It is not just a life safety document, as other codes, ASC 7 and so on, might be. Okay? This property protection from hurricanes and water intrusion, I believe it's integral to our economic strength. If we change and we don't do this, we will affect the number of people who are annually coming into the state. Okay? And so the number of people living in those coastal communities are high. They need to be felt that we appreciate what it means to live in Miami, what it means to live in Tampa, and subject yourself to this, but that we are hearing them and we are responding to the homeowners and all residents of the state of Florida. So that, I know it's not quite a point-by-point rebuttal, but I think this gives a much better flavor for where I see us going here, and I would be happy to answer any questions as best I can. And thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, David. So you saw David's presentation, and I think his very much revised proposed scope based on the comments received prior to today's meeting. Does anybody have any clarification, not discussion, pros or cons, but clarification on what David presented as his revised proposed scope? Just say your name first, and I'll stack a list, and we'll get you. Just questions. Let's get the questions answered. All right? Anybody else want to have questions answered? All right. Go ahead, Joe.
This is from David. Joe Belcher. I'm curious. I hear a lot of homeowner in your discussion. I see homeowner in your. I see the residential code in your plan. However, I thought we were talking about mid-rise and high-rise, which is what I also see in the plan. I just want to make sure that are we talking about everything? Are we talking about high-rise? Are we talking about mid-rise? What are we? What is our kind of goal here?
David?
Joe, thanks for the clarification. When I say homeowner, that's pretty generic as someone who owns a household, but it could be a condominium owner or an apartment owner of sorts. But the focus here should be on mid-high-rise buildings.
David, you could change it to building owner. Change it to building owner. Maybe that's kind of...
I figured that a condominium owner is a homeowner. I just wanted to. I saw you had the residential code is listed as one of your references, and I heard a lot of that. And I just wanted to make sure we're still talking about high rise. Thank you.
All right. Any other clarifications for David?
This is Jamie.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Dr. Pravat, regarding the drafted proposal for the scope of work, there is mention in Section 9 of the draft that indicates Miami-Dade County is being in 170 mile an hour. Was that reference just generically, or is, I mean, based on the Florida building code, we have the 175 3-second gust requirement for the areas where Miami would fall?
Jamie, thank you for that clarification. Yeah, it's, you know, I just choose a value in the around that. I don't think the specific design level would change the direction of my proposal.
Okay. And I've got a couple of follow-ups, if I may.
Yes, go ahead, Jamie.
Moving on to Section 9, the fifth paragraph in that section, second to last sentence, indicates that wind pressures on the building quadruple every time the wind velocity doubles. It indicates not necessarily wind velocity, but that the building height doubles. I think maybe what was intended there was wind velocity doubles. That might need to be looked at a little closer there.
Okay, well, I'm not seeing it here. Am I on the right? What?
Section 9, the fifth paragraph in that section, second to last sentence.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It starts off, it's technically
right before possible. The bullet.
Yeah, right before the bullets.
Says the designers will also be aware that wind pressures on a building quadruple every time the building height doubles. That might be the wind velocity doubles.
Wind velocity doubles, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. And then further down on Section 12, the second to last paragraph, it indicates there that there's an increase that logarithmically is increased for the water pressures. Is that something that has a reference, or is that something that's rationalized elsewhere? I've not been able to pinpoint where that increase in that fashion occurs.
What are we talking about?
This is Section 12.
Yeah.
Second to last paragraph.
It's on page 10.
Okay. And that last couple of lines there indicate that, furthermore, it should be noted that design wind pressures at 10 meters, as the FPC specifies through ASE 7, and correspondingly wind-driven rain intensity increases logarithmically with height. So yes. They're kind of straight from the upper floor. So that logarithmic increase, is that something that you're using as a reference? Is there a reference where that is indicated, that increase is logarithmic?
This would be taken straight from ASE 7, whereby the wind speed increases, and we have two models for that. Either we can use a power law, or we can use a logarithmic increase in the wind velocity. Okay, what is not discussed with this model here, though, is that in addition to that logarithmic increase with height, there's also the turbulence intensity, which is essentially the extent of fluctuations, okay? And so the fluctuation, it moves in the opposite direction, and this is something that, I tried to hint at that, said the, even if we use that logarithmic increase in pressure, we may be very over-conservative if we don't allow some fluctuations and dynamics in the test pressure.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we're not leading into the assumption or the condition that the increase for rain intensity is logarithmic. And that was my concern in making that reference there. But again,
I don't know.
If there is any such reference, that'd be good to maybe include there as indicated in section X from ASCE, because I haven't seen a whole lot of information on water performance in ASCE. But, you know, just as a comment. And in closing, I do support the fact that the scope of this project be, curtailed or limited to what the Florida Building Code would define as high-rise buildings. I think there was only about 12 or 13% of those buildings that were included in the sample of the study that were in the mid-rise condition, the majority of them being high-rise, more than 75 feet. So I think if we focus on the performance, water performance of those types of buildings, that might narrow the scope and breadth of this exercise. Okay. So thank you.
All right, so that's a good segue to commenting, because that was a comment that the scope should be narrowed to high-rise, greater than 75 feet as opposed to mid-rise. All right, unless there's other questions, anybody have any questions before we start getting additional comments? Okay, so who would like to, Jamie just provided the first comment, I think we could say. We've received some written comments. I think this is a very different scope than proposed in the original document, because it's really looking at establishing study options as opposed to a specific proposal. Okay, who else wants to comment?
Jim Schock here. I'll make a comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, thank you. I think this revised scope is a good start. I think the combination, I think it's really going to end up being a combination of different things that's going to cause this water intrusion. I don't think it's going to be one thing or another, so we should focus on a way to get the biggest bang for our buck. And I don't know if the testing can be segmented to, you know, the different items so that it can be better determined, you know, how much of it is due to the window leaking versus how much of it's due to ceiling failure versus how much of it, and that way you could sort of determine, you know, where your biggest improvement can be for the dollar.
Sure.
So that would be my comment.
All right. Yep. Thank you.
Jim, that is part and parcel of the water testing process. As far as I understand, it is one, you know, stepwise isolates different parts of the cladding system, and you know, you can look and see how much leakage occurs. So that is, you know, very fundamental to what I had in mind.
Okay, thank you.
All right, are there other comments?
This is Gary Hartman from Intertech. I want to thank Dr. Pravat for putting this draft scope of work together and putting it out there. I know it's not always a fun seat to be in, to float an idea and then take the slings and arrows that come your way. So thank you for your effort in putting this together. I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the practical considerations for the curtain wall testing. I understand that's further down the road, and we'll certainly get into that and define that better as we go on. For the static cycling testing at pressure levels that are well beyond what we typically do, we'll almost surely be looking at And, you know, immediately we think of the blowers and the things we need to generate pressure, but another concern for that, and particularly when you get to an assembly of that size, is the chamber that you'll use. We'll certainly need a walk-in chamber to do it with water. And, you know, that'll be a... It's attainable, it's doable. One thing that may prove to be an issue, E547, the cyclic static loading that we've proposed in this draft work plan, has time tolerances, and as we get larger with the assembly, of course, the volumes that you need to pressurize get larger, and we might find that we can't necessarily meet the time requirements. In terms of the R&D side of things, I don't see that as necessarily a deal breaker, but if we're looking to correlate it to code requirements on the back end, the further you get from meeting the standards, the tougher it is to codify that moving forward. So I just wanted to throw those practical considerations out here so we can be considering them as we move that direction.
All right. Who else would like to comment on the revised proposed scope and approach, if you will? Okay. So everybody's reasonably comfortable with this proposed approach?
I'm sorry. This is Jason Seals from AMA.
Go ahead, Jason.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Pravat. I think that the changes that you've put in here. Or that you presented today are meaningful and will improve the study. One of the things, I had a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. There is, at least in the fenestration industry, manufacturers have been testing and rating products to E547 for many, many years. There is a wealth of data out there. However, it's a laboratory test, as we all know, and there is no good relationship that has been established between rating these products in the laboratory versus how they actually perform or the design pressure or storm loads they can resist during an actual wind event. Has there been any consideration given to actually creating a study to correlate the performance when tested under a static E331 or E547 test versus what the performance would be, say, if tested under a dynamic test or in actual storm conditions?
I think the, Jason, thank you so much for your comments. I think the place I would start there is the test E331, E547 done by Forest Masters and the consortium of industry back in 2007. Yes, we have done this. We do know that to some extent what those correlations so will achieve. So I don't think it's quite as you know, unknown as you said. What's his name? He's on the board of FMA, I believe, Hepstaros, I've probably butchered that name, but he was involved in it. And, you know, so we have those two or three papers and theses out there and one dissertation. So that to me is the place to start. So we don't necessarily have to starting from scratch. The differences, I think, are that whereas that prior test focused on the low-rise building and the Florida construction, two-story and this and that, this one focusing on high-rises, I think there is going to be a lot of work or inquiry to figure out, as Jamie Gascoigne said, what are the how does the wind-driven rain, the sleeting rain, the run, and so on, and what values should we use? The cyclic test, I'm not even sure that would be the ways to go, but it's what we have. So I think
ultimately, right now, I'm looking for something that one can just get a start and see how things perform. While there are a lot of information, a wealth of data from manufacturing systems out there, for the most part, that would be unavailable to us. Or even if we work with a consultant, or even you, I don't think you can, you know, just hand that all out for public thing. You know, that is proprietary type information to some extent.
It is proprietary information, but we could make an attempt to get submittals from manufacturers that could be anonymized and then submitted. But we can consider that later down the road.
All right.
One other question I had that we focus a lot on the buildings that have that were reported to have leakage during the storm in Irma. You know, and rightly so. They did have damage. They did have leakage, and we need to find out the reason why. However, 100% of the buildings within the Irma Pass did not report leakage. There were buildings out there that didn't leak, or at least didn't report leakage. Has there been any study or information available or could be made available on these buildings that did not leak, so that we could compare? We can compare buildings that did perform well in the path of the storm versus those that did leak, and then we could use that information to compare and contrast the design of the envelope, the design and ratings of the fenestration systems, the maintenance schedules that were employed, all the differences between the buildings to better understand why the buildings that did leak did have problems.
Mm. No, there's no information available that I have been able to find.
Is there a way to get that information? Is it possible to include that as part of the study?
I think that in itself would be a completely different animal. I have tried several times. I think this is the third time that I've used surveys, I've used MTurk and so on to poll people and ask them questions. It tends to be a very expensive process because you have to throw such a wide net and follow up with letters and emails and postcards and so on and so forth, and you typically get very few people who respond. The majority of people who have responded to my surveys, the last one was in Hurricane Michael, they all suffered some damage, some water intrusion damage. The people who choose not to respond typically don't have any damage. So, you know, I don't know what sort of incentives one could come up with, what sort of marketing one could come up with, but, you know, I think that would be well taking the scope in a completely different direction. Not that it is not a valuable information. I think it is. One of my points was, is there a way that we can put in place a system for self-reporting or some kind of system whereby when right after the next hurricane, you drive around and see how many carpets get laid on the sidewalk, and you can use that as a simulation for how many carpets got wet on the inside. But other than that, I'm out of ideas on that one right now. Sorry.
All right. Additional questions or comments?
Rich.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I'd like to compliment David on the work that he's done on this project. I think the reports that he's turned in and the comments that have been made are absolutely excellent. It shows an extreme clear understanding of the issues and a scientific approach some methodology of trying to address the problems at hand. One of the questions that Jason just, well, I don't know if it was a question, but he made a statement that some buildings didn't experience any water leakage, and I would be curious to know which buildings those would be, because I haven't run into any buildings that didn't have some sort of water leakage. I would be curious to know if there are any, and how he would know whether there are any of those type of buildings. The idea of trying to find out how much water leakage took place and what buildings did have water leakage or didn't have water leakage could perhaps be addressed by contacting the building managers of the various condominiums. So this would be I think would be a good start. And I think there's some associations, some building managers associations out there that could possibly be contacted, and perhaps a survey done in that in that respect to get some idea of what actually occurred. I know the buildings that I looked at, for water intrusion issues, obviously they had water intrusion. But since I've done those inspections, I've been out on other buildings related to additional items, something different than water intrusion. And every time I go to a building, I talk to the building manager and say, by the way, did you have any water damage during Hurricane Irma? And in every single case, they told me, oh, yeah, on the windward side of the building, we had all kinds of water intrusion. And some of these buildings were very, very new buildings. I would be curious to know what buildings didn't have any water intrusion, and I would also like to know why not. What was done right on those buildings to prevent water intrusion. So far, I haven't seen that, but that's just a suggestion as to how to go forward on it. Once again, David, thank you for your good work. You did a great job. We really do appreciate it. I'm done.
All right. Additional comments? Okay, so on balance, are folks supportive of this very much, I would say, well thought through, revised approach for study options? Okay, don't forget.
This is Jason Seals again. I think it is, it sounds like it is an improved scope, but until we can actually get a written scope to analyze with all the revisions, it's hard to say yes or no whether this is an acceptable approach.
Right, that's fine. I mean, I think you provided good feedback that to David and to Mo at the staff, that they'll be able to use that to revise the scope consistent with the discussions and the comments that have been received, and also consistent with the needs of the Florida Building Commission relative to the building code. And that was the goal of this, and I think that's been very helpful. The comments have been helpful, and I think David's revision based on comments has been very responsive to the concerns. And that's what staff will work with and present at a future date to the appropriate entity. Is there any other comments from either group at this time? Okay, good. So then let's go ahead and, Commissioner Schock, if you'd like to adjourn the
second roll call.
Oh, thank you.
We need a second roll call.
Yeah, I'm so used to the face-to-face meetings that I forget about these protocols. Okay, structural TAC, second roll call. Commissioner Schock.
Yes, I'm here.
Warner Chang.
I'm here.
David Compton.
Here.
Mike Garacio.
Here.
Jamie Gascon.
Here.
Joe Hetzel.
Here.
Joe Kim.
Here.
Dan Laverich.
Here.
C.W. McComber.
Here.
Craig Carino.
Here.
And Dick Wilhelm for Steve Strawn.
Here.
All right, we have the same 11 we started with. Going over to the, well, actually, Commissioner Schock, if you want to go ahead and adjourn the structural TAC, and then I'll adjourn the work group.
Okay, being no further discussions or actions in front of the Structural Technical Advisory Committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you're a member of the work group, don't hang up yet, even though you're also on the TAC. Okay, we're going to now do the same for the Fenestration Work Group. Joe Belcher. Warner Chang.
Here.
Commissioner Compton.
Here.
Jamie Gascon.
Here.
Commissioner Gross.
I'm here.
Mike Garacio.
Here.
Gary Hartman.
Here.
John Holt.
Here.
Dan Laverich.
Here.
Adam Locke.
What? I couldn't hear that. Did you say Lynn Miller?
I said Adam Locke.
Oh, sorry.
Here.
Okay, Lynn Miller.
Present.
Greg Perino.
Here.
Jason Seals.
Here.
Commissioner Schock.
Here.
And Dick Wilhelm for Steve Strawn.
Here.
All right, we have the same 15 members. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'm going to motion to adjourn.
Second?
Thompson, Schock, second.
All right. Wilhelm, second.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.